The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah. That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite. That cat is high.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Today in the studio, good friend and great bartender, Maxwell Britton from Maison Première. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. You are a Tucson, Arizona native.
Correct.
That moved to the city, what, like 5 years ago?
5, 6 years ago, yeah.
Cool. Now, were you bartending before? Or, I mean, you were probably not. Were you, like, working in the industry before?
Yeah, I was. My first job was bussing tables at a Mexican restaurant when I was 16, which turned into bar backing over there, and I kind of had a couple other bar backing gigs along the way.
Lots of drinking to be done out there in the desert.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's not a whole lot of stuff to do out there. Yeah.
Cool. So you moved here about 5 years ago, and I first met you when you were working under Damon Dyer at Jack the Horse.
Right. Yeah.
He was a really great bartender. I always call him the other Damon.
The other Damon. Yeah.
We're the two Damons. He's the other Damon, even though he was probably on the scene long before I was. I'm not trying to date him or anything, but yeah. I met you a while back when I was working at Linnell's in Red Hook, and I remember thinking, like, who the hell is this young guy, like, coming in and buying bitters? And
yeah.
But yeah, then turned into you were bar backing there with Damon Dyer, correct?
I was a runner there. I started as a runner. I helped him open the place, and Damon was the head bartender and bar manager over there, and I, you know, after just a couple of days with working with him, I saw him behind the bar, and I was like, what in the hell is this guy doing? Like, what is going on back there? And so that just kind of turned into staying late, coming early, asking lots of questions, stealing books from his library,
all
that sort of stuff, and eventually, you know, like, I was promoted and was able to pick up a couple of shifts behind the bar, and that's kind of how it all started for me, pretty much.
You and Aaron.
Yeah. Well, Aaron actually came along a little bit later on.
Yeah.
Damon wasn't actually there when Eamon came in. But yeah, he was definitely quite influenced by what Damon had left behind, as I was.
And you guys were doing things like making your own bitters and, you know, doing
syrups and stuff like that. Yeah, we were making our own bitters, doing lots of infusions, keeping it real. Yeah, keeping it real, fucking ourselves out, you know.
Cool. You mentioned books that you would borrow from Damon.
Right.
And I remember we were talking about last night, we were talking about the Charles H. Baker book, Jigger Beaker Flask, Drinking Around the World.
Yeah.
Which is one of the greatest, he's probably the greatest cocktail writer, just his wit and his charm, you know.
Yeah.
But that was actually a gift that was given to you by St. John Frizzell,
right,
from Fort Defiance.
Yeah.
Who used to write for Bon Appetit and worked at Pegu Club and stuff.
Right, yeah.
So from the time that you got that book, had you read it before?
No, I didn't even, I mean, I knew about it. I knew it was this, like, famous relic, you know, and it was something that, it was just like this, like, bespoke, you know, historic piece of history, you know, that a lot, like, some people I heard talk about. And I knew that St. John was, like, a major, like, supporter.
Huge,
like, just
Charles
like, I mean,
H.
he's
Baker
like, the, he's the, like, the go to Charles H. Baker guy.
Yeah. It's like David Wondrich.
Yeah.
With Jerry Thomas.
Right.
St. John with Charles H. Baker.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
So, yeah.
What happened was, you saw me in Linnell's a lot, and I hung out in Red Hook a lot, and that was because Jack the Horse is nearby, and I became friends with people over at the Bait and Tackle, and I actually was, since I was only bartending two nights a week at Jack the Horse, Aaron Sullivan was kind enough to see me as this young guy, you know, kind of like, oh man, he's hungry for some shifts, and she kicked me some shifts over at Bait and Tackle,
right?
And so I hung out down there a lot, and St. John kind of like, he took me under his wing, and he saw how passionate I was, and one night I was having dinner at
The Good Fork,
The Good Fork, And I was sitting at the bar, and he's like, "Hey, man, I got to show you something really cool." And he like went outside and came back and had handed me like this sort of like old, you know, two volume like set of books. And I'm like, "What is this? What is this?" And then I see it's Around the World with a Jigger, Beaker, and Flask, Volume One with a Jigger, Beaker, and Flask, and Volume Two, Fork, Knife, and Spoon. And I was like, "Oh man, this is really cool. Right on, you know." And I'm like flipping through it, you know, excited to see it. And then I'm trying to hand it back to him, and he was just like, "No, man, this is yours." And I'm like, "What?"
Nice.
And I'm just like, "Oh my god, dude! Like, this is amazing." And so that was kind of my very first introduction to like that style of making drinks and that sort of like sort of trying to recreate, you know, yeah, those drinks.
That was a very gentlemanly move on his behalf.
Oh yeah. Definitely. Extremely with influential.
With
extremely
a book called The Gentleman's Companion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that really changed my whole career, pretty much.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, yeah, and that, after you had read this book, after you'd started working in more of the like classic cocktail field, you actually took inspiration from the title of that book to start when you started doing some consulting work and freelance work with different bars, spirits companies. Your company is actually called Jigger, Beaker, Flask.
Yeah, I mean, it was just really just kind of giving it a name. You know, a lot of bartenders have some really like, you know, they have similar sounding, you know, company titles. I think Brian Miller's is Double Windsor. Chad Solomon and Christy Pope is I think it's Cuff and Buttons. Yeah.
That's, which is actually like a catering.
Right. Company. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I kind of took a nod from that, you know, but I also really liked the way that it sounded. It kind of reminded me like kind of like a law firm or something.
I remember you telling
know?
Me that. That's really
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
It looks cool on a business card
too.
Yeah,
totally.
So, and that's actually something you were doing with your brother.
Yeah. Yeah. And we still kind of do it a little bit, but recently him and I have been doing a lot of independent projects. He's doing some stuff in Queens. I was doing a project in the Lower East Side before I started doing Mason Premier. And, it was just a little, it just was a better fit for me, you know, but I, you know, that's a good thing about having a consulting company. You know, I was like, well, I don't think I can do this project any longer, but you know, like, you know, that doesn't mean I can't do business with you. You know, I can get my partner over here, my brother, and he can pick it up. And
yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, that place is called Apple and he's going to be opening, I think in May or something like that.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Your brother, he's actually bar manager or?
He was a bar manager at the Andaz in Fifth Avenue. Andaz. That was put together through Alchemy Consulting, and he kind of spearheaded the project for them for about 6 months.
Cool.
Now he's kind of a free agent again.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember meeting him. I actually went over there with you that one night. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good time.
After some crazy event.
The Bacardi Ultimate Spirits Challenge. Deal.
They still haven't paid me for that.
What? Oh, man. Call these guys up.
Well, moving on. So, a little bit more about Maison Premier. You are the beverage director and marketing manager there, which sounds very official. But essentially, you're running the bar program, bar managing, you know, do you bartend a little bit over there?
Yeah, I get the chance to still be behind the bar on Friday and Saturday nights, and we're open until 4 a.m. every single night, and, you know, we really get our asses kicked.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a little different since I'm used to kind of, you know, I used to be kind of behind the bar all the time. Now it's only like once or twice a week, and I go and get my ass handed to me until like 6 in the morning or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh
man, I can't. I don't remember the last time that I worked till 4 in the morning at a bar, but I do remember those times and they were pretty brutal. My hat's off to you. And you guys have a very like old school, like New Orleans style kind of like vibe. You've got, you know, obviously you've got like the absinthe program and oysters. You've got my favorite, oyster shucker in the city.
Eddie Oysters. Yep.
Who works at Primeats, he works at Jimmy's 43.
Yeah.
He actually won the competition last year, the New York City like oyster shucking competition.
I believe it. Yeah,
he did. I mean, he's like officially the best
oyster. Well, one thing, you know, like Monday through Friday from 4 to 7, we do our oyster happy hour. We do $1 oysters. And right now we have a little bit over 30 varieties of oysters. I mean, it just turns into a complete zoo. And so we're lucky to have a guy like him get behind there, and he's just, you know, cranking them out. Like,
totally.
You come there at like 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and more than half of the bar is sitting there with like three tiers of oysters, you know, and drinking
they got like
tons
the plateau
of
going,
and yeah, all that stuff. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Now, okay, so I love that is just like the image that just popped in my head. It's like, I haven't been there for happy hour, but I have been there late night.
Right.
It's such a decadent, like, you know, visual, you know, like,
yeah.
Oysters and absinthe and just like this decadent, like general, like revelry, just like all over the place, nice music, you know, just having fun, like enjoying life.
Yeah.
Isn't that like, do you find that, I don't know. I hate when people talk about recession time and stuff. I feel like this, I don't want to get political, but I feel like we're kind of like pulling out of it. But isn't it kind of, I don't know. Do you feel like that kind of like situation with just like that kind of decadence and like that fun environment? Do you feel like it's something that people like look forward to because they're, you know, not able to spend, you know, as much on like the rent and stuff. So whenever they get a chance to come to your place, and like they just blow it up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've never really thought of it that way. I mean, in terms of recession and sort of like decadence and going out and enjoying yourself the way that you might when, you know, like you're more affluent. I think that's just one thing about like the demand of our culture, which is, you know, like a lot of people still don't compromise those things even when, you know, like funds are low.
Yeah.
You know, like people, at least in New York, you know, like we all work really hard and, you know, they're still going after it.
Long ass winter.
Right. You know, and that's like, lucky.
There's
got
to be a silver lining somewhere. Right.
And for us, I mean, that's lucky for us because we haven't really had to experience very much of, you know, the hardships that most people have had in the recession. So
it's awesome, especially coming up pretty soon. Well, I mean, as we're moving into the spring, I saw last night The Backyard of Maison Premiere. So that's going to be. It's going to add to the excitement.
Doubling our capacity, 1,000 square foot patio garden, putting in another oyster station. We're going to be doing another service bar.
Outside, right?
Outside, yeah. It's going to be really exciting. There's a lot of stuff we have coming up for that.
Expansion's always a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's always a very exciting thing. I just looking at that backyard last night, I was thinking about how far into debt back on that subject that I'm going to go into this summer hanging out at your bar.
Right.
So it's been open now for 2 months.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, you said like it's been blowing up, you know, the happy hour has been great. You've got great guys behind chucking. You've got great people behind the stick making drinks.
Yeah, totally.
As far as I wanted to ask you to bring one of your cocktail menus, but I totally forgot to, but that's fine. You can just like give us a rundown of some of the kinds of cocktails that are being made there. Right. Obviously, you know, like New Orleans style.
Mm-hmm.
But why don't you tell us a little
bit? Sure. Yeah. I mean, we're going to be, I mean, right now it's actually, sort of minimal. It's 8 cocktails at the top of the menu. Half of them are very classic, almost rarely known by some, New Orleans cocktails, like the Obituary and the Old Hickory, which was actually named after Andrew Jackson. What else do we have on there? I mean, we have the Absinthe Frappe, the Opal,
the Opal, yeah,
right. And then we have some of our contemporary inspired cocktails that are on the menu that still kind of try to stay in that same vein using, you know, things like Peychaud's and the Creole Bitters by The Bitter Truth. And we have a cocktail on the menu that was inspired by one of my favorite drinks I was telling you about last night, the Jimmy Roosevelt. This one's called the St. Helena, which is named after the island that Napoleon was exiled on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a cool drink. It's yellow chartreuse, champagne, aquavit, sugarcane rinse, sugar cube soaked with bitters.
We were talking about the sugarcane rinse last night.
Yeah.
It's a pretty, I love it. I think that's a bold move. It's like, it's really, we were talking about the ceremony of the drink last night too. And like how that, that really plays into it, you know, it's very ceremonial, like the production, you know,
that's really important to me. And it's really important to us at Maison Premiere. And I think that's kind of like what really got me into cocktails in the first place. You know, I mean, I was telling you, you know, like back in high school, you know, I was definitely like an avid stoner, you know, and that whole ceremony is kind of what always appealed to me. It was just kind of like sitting down and sort of doing this preparation and this ritual. And that's kind of like what our Absinthe Fountain represents. And that's sort of like what cocktails represent to me, is just these very like classical, traditional ceremonies that you perform, you know, that people have always enjoyed for a really long time, you know. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of ceremonial procedures, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more. I want to go into depth about absinthe and dispel some myths and talk about the actual technicalities of the production. And then we'll talk more about being stoners growing up.
Cool. Right on. Word.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., Chef Erica Wides hits the airwaves to become your own personal chef instructor. Chef Wides, along with esteemed guests from the culinary world, dissect topics that range from the complex to the deceptively simple, combining classic culinary know-how, personal experiences, and the occasional virtual history lesson. Why We Cook is a great listen for culinary vets and rookies alike. Again, that's Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
We are back at the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Today, our guest is Maxwell Britton, bar manager, beverage director, marketing manager of Maison Premier. Before we took the break, we were talking about a little bit about absinthe and a little bit about being stoners growing up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And tell us, give us a little anecdote about growing up in
Tucson. Yeah. Well, you know, there wasn't a lot to do, or at least, you know, we didn't find any good reason to do anything better than just sit down and smoke a bunch of weed with our buddies. You know, and of course that led to other things that weren't good for us, but of course you do when you're young and stupid. So, yeah, I mean, we did lots of mushrooms and LSD and peyote and all that stuff. And so this was actually my first introduction to absinthe. Was we knew this guy. He was, like, a little bit older than all of us, and he hung out with us a lot. And I guess he, like, one day, like, figured out how to make absinthe. Or, I mean, he probably didn't make it at all, I'm sure. But, like, supposedly, yeah. He figured it out. And, you know, like, all we knew about it was that it was just, like, this, like, crazy thing that, like, artists used to trip out on and drink and get drunk off of and blah, blah, blah.
Cut their ears off.
And, right. You know. Yeah, so we wanted to do that. And so we bought some off of Creepy Chris. And we got stoned and forgot that we had it and left it in my friend's car. And we went to some house party like a few days later. And mind you, this is summertime, Tucson, Arizona, probably like 112 degrees outside. And we're like, oh man, we got that absinthe in the car. Let's see how that goes. And so we go to the car and the bottle's steaming hot, you know. And it was, I mean, I'm certain it was like Everclear infused with some like dry store-bought absinthe or wormwood or whatever. So anyways, we took some shots. It was steaming hot. Just this super high
hot
proof.
Hot absinthe sounds delicious.
Yeah, super high proof Everclear. And yeah, I mean, that didn't work out too well. I mean, my guttural reaction was pretty quick. And let's just say that Charlie's mom was pretty pissed off about the backseat of the car.
I was just thinking, the founder of this radio network... he's really going to like this interview because he loves absinthe.
So, I mean, moving on to like later on, you know, after drinking illegitimate absinthe out of the backseat of my friend's mom's car, You know, I've been lucky enough to be a part of the team at Mason Premier, where we are inspired by, you know, old world New Orleans and, you know, like hotels of days gone by in New York, right. And yep. cafes in France. And, you know, over the years, I've been lucky enough to receive a great education from a lot of really, really experienced professionals. So, you know, I'm now a lot more educated and a lot more familiar with legitimate absinthe and what really makes absinthe. And
right.
I've definitely dispelled the myths of my own, you know, thinking mm-hmm. when I was a teenager, like, right. oh, yeah, you know, this thing is going to just make me trip out for, you know, 6 hours and it's going to be awesome. And that's really not what absinthe is. It's really not what absinthe was ever intended right. to be. And, I mean, I would say in a lot of cases when that has happened, in regards to absinthe, it's normally been some kind of illegitimate absinthe, you know, probably some hooch that, you know, some undesirable person put in a pot still and threw in a bunch of gnarly ingredients and slapped a label on it and called it absinthe. And they could get away with that kind of thing back then because, you know, there was no regulation on alcohol.
There was no regulation on it. There was also no regulation on what was called absinthe, but right. technically,
right.
If you'd like to share some of this education you're just talking about
sure.
with our listeners, you know, a lot of people, you know, you can buy these like absinthe kits online where basically you're just taking wormwood and infusing like a vodka or a high proof neutral spirit.
Right.
And that's not actually what absinthe is. It has to be legally distilled after it's infused
right
to be called absinthe
right
before you've got like upwards of like 400 parts per million of chemical thujone
right
after distillation is down around 10, which is the legal limit
right and thujone is what supposedly is what causes these sort of like yeah. psychedelic induces these psychedelic experiences. But it's just kind of funny because I mean even in like what's called pre-ban absinthe, which is like the absinthe that has like a high thujone content, even back then there's more thujone content in a bowl of pasta and butter with sage mm-hmm. now than there was like in pre-ban absinthe. And it's just all about the SLA and, you know, importing and exporting laws and all that sort of stuff. But after all of that, you know, what makes an absinthe is, you know, all natural ingredients, no coloring, no additives, no sugars. Most of the time you're always going to end up with for a traditional absinthe, you're going to see things like, star anise is going to always be the most strong mm-hmm. component and flavor in absinthe. And then after that, you're going to have, star anise, lemon balm, fennel is very common. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I mean, there's some people get into some funky stuff and like
stinging nettles and
yeah, you know,
starflower stalk,
yeah. run of the mill type, yeah. type ingredients.
Totally.
You know?
So after, well, obviously, we have these myths about, like, absinthe and about making you trip. But really, I mean, if you drink enough of anything, it's right. going to make...
That's what I tell people all yeah. the time they come in. It's kind of, I mean, I feel sometimes kind of bad for, like, sort of letting my customers down, you know? Yeah. You're like, oh, so, you know, which one's going to make me trip out the most? And like listen, you don't have to even drink absinthe. You can drink a lot of booze, and no matter what, that's going to yeah. just make you flip your lid, you know? I mean,
totally.
So,
and plus, like, I do feel like there's a euphoric state that you get from drinking absinthe, but yeah. I don't think it's because of the thujone content. I always feel like any kind of herbal liqueur
yeah.
or spirit, I feel like it just kind of hits your system in a different way. And
yeah.
it's very light and refreshing. It kind of makes you feel that way,
yeah.
you know? And also, it's... Absinthe is really high proof. I mean,
yeah.
that's also a big player in,
yeah.
In that.
Anywhere from a lot, I mean, in most cases, anywhere from 50% to 80% alcohol.
Yeah, I've never seen an absinthe that's less than 100 proof.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely, if you're drinking, you know, a couple of glasses of it, you're probably going to, you know.
Right. Yeah. And traditionally, it's always served at about an ounce to an ounce and a quarter per serving, you know,
yeah.
And so when you're dealing with like a 75 proof spirit, you know, that's, you know, why it's always drank with, you know, like 4 to 6 parts water most of the time. You know, it has to really be cut down, you know, and yeah. to get into that, that's like a whole nother thing, adding yeah. the water just beyond,
it's a whole other show,
just beyond, yeah, diluting and everything, you know, it's about kind of like letting these like very subtle, like subleties bloom, you know, it's called the louche, you know, that's what the louche, like yeah. what the louche does.
When
know,
it becomes of, opaque after yeah. the water comes
yeah, in. Yeah, and it opens up like all these sort of underlying flavors.
But, you know, like water in cocktails, what, well, yeah, it technically, like, the definition of cocktail, you know, it's like sugar, water, bitters, and alcohol.
Right.
I mean, like, water's in that recipe for a reason. Yeah. It's water's in every cocktail. After mm-hmm. you stir it, after you shake it, every cocktail's about, you know, 20% water by the time it's in your glass.
Right.
And even when you do, like, whiskey tastings, you know, there's always some water around, so you can put the water in there, and water really breaks up the chemical compounds, lets it bloom, and then with absinthe, it creates what you're just describing as the louche effect.
Right.
That's what turns the absinthe from, you know, like a clear green to a cloudy, pale, like...
Yeah, and for absinthe connoisseurs, you know, if you go on to... I should share this with, you know, the listeners. Mm-hmm. You know, if you do have an interest in absinthe and you don't know very much about it, and you'd like to kind of learn a little bit more about how to taste it, how it's drank, and how it's enjoyed, there's some really great websites and some great online communities that are major supporters and have really kept absinthe alive until places like Maison Premier has opened up or other places, you know, around the world. There's the Wormwood Society. I think it's mm-hmm. wormwood.org. That's a really good one. And then there's, I think I want to say Lefebvre, but it might be just favert.com. And, you know, they sort of, they have like all these different rating systems, you know, mouth feel, mm-hmm. louche action,
totally.
Aroma, aftertaste, like all that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah. And it would behoove anyone that's, going to start, or would like to, get into, drinking absinthe to go and actually, you know, like any other thing, become educated on the subject. You know, you don't go fire a rifle without knowing how to load it and shoot it.
I mean, a lot of people kind of have done that coming to Maison Premier, but it's been really cool. You know, I think that's kind of the demand of the community in Brooklyn and in, you know, a metropolitan area like New York, where cocktails are kind of like standard form at this point, you know, and I feel like the public is ready for that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I mean, I still get a lot of people who are kind of unaware of what's going on. And I mean, I'm the intermediary between the source and the public. So, of mm-hmm. course, you know, that's my responsibility to speak to them about it. But a lot of the time people are very excited just to participate. And, you know, they're in for an education and they're in for a good time. They're in for a ceremony, you know,
yeah,
like
absolutely.
I said before. And
so
that's really cool.
As we were talking about this, we just loaded up the... can you describe the what we have sitting in front of us?
This contraption here has a lot of different names. You called it last night a...
Brawley.
A brawley. And basically, it looks like a teacup with four legs, and it kind of has this weighted bottom that teeters chilled water over an absinthe spoon, which has a sugar cube sitting on it.
And it is very ceremonial. It's really cool because the way it has two chutes as the water drips down through a hole of the bottom of this, the vessel that's floating above the glass. It has two chutes that teeter back and forth, like he was saying. And we're actually kind of like mixing these two techniques. So typically, the sugar cube, Patrick Martins is standing behind the door, staring us down. He can't wait to get in here and try some absinthe. So typically what happens, you have different techniques for different countries, actually, for the preparation of absinthe. And there's like absinthe Americano, mm-hmm. there's like the Czech way, where you light the cube on fire.
Which is like the most
terrible,
despicable, and looked down upon by like the professional absinthe community.
The Czech way, like, I mean, like, for a while, Czech absinthe was pretty much like what you could get, like, exclusively.
Right, and that's what people thought was like the thing, you know, what it really was. You'd get like, absinthe like called the, like from Rouge absinthe from Czechoslovakia, like bright red, you know, like looks like wine punch type stuff, and that's just so, so far away from what it's supposed to be.
So you've got like different preparations going, you know, you've got the spoon with the sugar. The sugar, actually, the sugar cube with the grated spoon, then you pour the water over it. You've got these different techniques that suit different types of absinthe. Like, obviously, like, for grittier, like, kind of dirtier, like, rustic absinthes, you want to use the sugar cube to sweeten them, just like in the same way that they used to do with the original cocktail. I mean, like, you were sweetening the bitters, and then you were just throwing booze on it, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of like the same preparation. This device, actually, this contraption, I wish this was a TV show instead of a radio show so we could show this. It's a really cool production going on here. This contraption, I believe, was originally intended just to do water with absinthe. And then with the spoon,
right,
you would put the sugar cube over, and you would take the fountain,
right,
twist it,
right,
just drop it down very slowly.
Yeah, we haven't even said this on the show yet, but we have probably one of the most sophisticated absinthe, what we call it,
right,
a tower. You know, it's not a fountain. We have an absinthe tower at Maison Premier, which is a piece-by-piece replica of the absinthe fountain, which once flowed at the old absinthe house in New Orleans.
Totally.
And it's like a 150-year-old design, and we took about six different contractors to figure it out, everything from the piping system to like the patinaed spigots and all that sort of stuff. You know, we kind of spent a lot of time figuring out how that worked, and it was inspired by the owner, Josh Boise, and executed by some really great artists from Williamsburg. So yeah, there's definitely, quite a lot of fanfare that comes with it. And I think that the Absinthe Tower really is a paramount representative of all that for us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in just the overall design of the place is amazing. Like even the beer taps.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, Josh Boise conceptualized everything. And then, you know, we had some really fantastic people, from the neighborhood, like the McCormick brothers, who, you know, they own Moto. They did design at Five Leaves and Hotel Del Mano. And
totally.
So, yeah, I mean, we've been lucky enough to have people like that with us.
So, can you tell us which absinthe? By the way, the studio smells amazing right now. It's really bloomed and it's filled up the whole room. Can you tell us which absinthe this is?
Yeah, absolutely. This is probably one of the best absinthes available in the United States. It's the master distiller, Ted Bro, is native New Orleans, native New Orleans, New Orleans? shouldn't have even tried to say that. Anyways, he is probably the up-to-date authority on absinthe, and he's been responsible for actually lifting the ban in the United States. He was the writer of the recipe for Lucid Absinthe, and he's still part of that company. He did the absinthe that we have now, which is the Jade Nouvelle New Orleans.
Right. This just hit the market, like, very recently.
I don't know how long it's been around for. I'm really not sure.
Because Lucid came on, and they had, like, he had the five other Jades, Jade line.
Yeah.
That were only available, like,
through his website, outside of the United States. And this is one of them, and he's bringing in a couple other. He's got the CF Burger. He has the Perique tobacco liqueur, which is an absinthe, but, you know, like,
it's so cool.
He's just out there doing all these things he probably shouldn't be doing, but he's so good at it. And
he's a mad scientist.
There was a documentary, I think, was nominated for an Academy Award for like a short documentary about absinthe that he was a part of. But this absinthe right here is really beautiful. It's what's called a vert. There's a couple different styles of absinthe that you can drink. You have your verts and you have your blanches, and vert is a very, very popular and traditional style of making absinthe in France. And then later on, when, you know, productions started getting kind of funky due to all of the slander and all that, and then, you know, they moved to Spain and Switzerland, and in Switzerland they started making blanches, you know, and they sort of did that in order for people to kind of not know that they were drinking absinthe.
Right.
And what Ted did here is just like a really traditional, really beautiful style. It won a silver medal at the Cheers. At the International Spirits Competition in 2006.
Oh my God, it's amazing, man.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous. It's got a lot of nice floral notes at the end.
Yeah.
Starts off, you know, light on the anise in the middle. There's just a really nice vegetal.
Lemon balm. Like,
yeah,
it's got that nice citrus note to it.
The fennel is really good there. I mean, I even get a little bit of white pepper off of it. It's the standard. It's the traditional style.
Others should be judged by.
Exactly. And totally. We have it now in the United States, and it's available for distribution in stores and, you know, at bars like Maison Premier. And I know there's a lot of other places around the States that have it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for bringing this on the show and yourself onto the show. And people, please go to Maison Premier. Get a seat at the bar, see Max when he's there. What nights are you actually behind the stage?
Yeah, Friday and Saturday nights. Get there at 6. We're open until 4 a.m. every night. And you might see me running around, you know, during the week when I'm not behind the bar. You know, say what's up.
you might see me running around there too.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much again for coming on the show. I want to thank my guest, Maxwell Britton, of Maison Premier, producer Jack Inslee, and this, I really want to thank this glass of absinthe right in front of me. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
Yes, higher than a kite. That cat is high.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Yes, he's high. Man, he's higher than a kite. That cat is high. Look at that look in his eye. Man, I wouldn't lie.
Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with the Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of six provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the six features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.